This is an Artist Journey podcast, the podcast for people thriving and creating as artists. I'm your host, Malcolm Dewey, and let's begin. Welcome to episode 28 of an Artist Journey podcast. Happy to be back with you again and chatting to you on what is today quite a cold and rainy day, but good to be inside my studio and sitting here having a chat to you on this podcast. What a privilege it is to live in this day and age. The other day I had a guest in my studio and we were talking about art in general and also some of the courses and painting workshops that I've been doing. And during our discussion, this person said to me, or asked me a question along the lines of, am I not worried about giving away my painting secrets on these courses and workshops? It was more of a sort of throwaway kind of question. It's quite easy to laugh this off. I mean, after all, I am doing art classes, offering courses online and all sorts of mentorship things as well to help artists with their painting and also the business of art. So for me to consider stopping doing this seemed to be something that that's not even worth really contemplating. But the question does actually provoke a bit of deeper thought, because there are people who are going to worry about whether their teaching is in fact going to undermine their art, or is it going to undermine their business? Is it a way of losing an edge perhaps in the marketplace? Things like that. If you make your living creating art in whatever form, will you be threatening your livelihood if somebody else learns the skill? Or if you teach somebody else, will the student turn around and become your boss? Those sort of ideas. So I thought let's dig into the subject a little deeper and look back, because this was a major issue centuries ago. The famous situation of artisans having sacred secrets, as it were. So what would happen in centuries past, artisans would belong to guilds which protected the artisans from competition and made sure their secrets were kept a secret. That was the whole idea. Make sure that those who had the skill could be guaranteed a good living and their children could follow in dad's footsteps and learn the skills as well and belong to the same trade. And this situation ran on like this for so many years that, of course, many surnames today relate to the artisan skills of our ancestors. A miller was somebody who milled wheat. A tailor, of course, was somebody who made clothing, and so on. Smith, one of the most popular surnames, most prevalent surnames in the world, related to all sorts of smiths, goldsmiths, blacksmiths, and so on. So anyway, this applied to a whole variety of skills. Masonry, leading to the famous Order of Masons that protected the academic skills and physical skills of masonry. And back in the day, these skills were almost regarded with reverence, a kind of a mystical skill, almost a religious skill. They were regarded so highly. You found also these artisans and guilds in the fine arts, more properly back in Renaissance times, for instance. Artists belonged to the apothecary guild, which was really a form of chemist, because they had to be able to have certain skills to mix their paint, which was all made by hand from original materials like minerals from the earth, crushed stone and things like that mixed with linseed oil to make paint. So you are more likely to be a chemist in nature to have to make your own paint. There's another story. I was researching Albrecht Dürer, an artist from Germany in the 15th century. His father was quite a prominent goldsmith in Nuremberg, and to such an extent that his father was not allowed by the town authorities to go traveling, let alone decide to leave and go and live in another town. That was unthinkable. This was to obviously protect his knowledge as a goldsmith, which was a profoundly important part of the Nuremberg economy. So you couldn't have somebody heading off and taking that skill elsewhere. You also found this in other trades like glassmaking, for instance, in Italy. You would have to, if you were an artisan with this knowledge, you'd have to stay put in your town. And if you divulged any of the secrets, you could find yourself in deep water, or rather in prison, or even executed in certain cases. There was no messing around in those days with secrets and trade secrets. So with time, the grip of guilds and these secret societies began to relax. More economic trade, population growth, things like that. You found that merchants, for instance, who had little time or patience for guilds, for instance, if they needed something or something done, if there's a great demand for it, ideas found a way of getting out of the secrets, or out of becoming secrets and becoming more common knowledge. So we got a situation where knowledge became a little bit more democratized. Competition in the industrial age intensified the following centuries. Of course, also the more civilized laws. You wouldn't find yourself with your head on the chopping block. This more civilized society led to more freedom, more liberty, people becoming more entrepreneurial. On the downside, though, as time progressed, the lure of fame and fortune obviously led to a little bit more undesirable consequences. Another famous example in the 19th century was the rivalry between Nikola Tesla and Thomas Edison. Which one of them was the first one to discover electricity? So it was allegedly that Tesla was the first one to stumble on this invention, but Thomas Edison stole his idea and published the invention first and got all the fame and credit. So back in those days, the patent system, if it did exist at all, gave little protection. Even in the early 20th century, patents were sometimes vague or very loosely enforced. So tough times when there is a lot of freedom as well. So we got a situation here. Do you stifle progress or do you set it free? So there has to be a balance between overprotection and a Wild West situation where everything goes and the winner takes all. If there's too much protection of ideas, then you stifle progress. For example, under Soviet Russia, one could argue that society was held back there because large parts of the population were simply not allowed to proceed with any ideas. You were in your fixed place in society and you couldn't move out of it. So there was no incentive. On the other hand, if you have too little protection of ideas and secrets, then the risks of converting those ideas into inventions become a lot greater. If you go to all the cost and trouble and then just see your work copied by someone else, the incentive, once again, is going to be much lower. It also harms those that do the copying. For example, I think one would agree that the economy in China, at least in the past few decades, innovation, I should say, in China suffered greatly because a large part of the economy was, in fact, based on copying ideas of other countries. and this has harmed or held back the Chinese economy as far as innovation was concerned. How do we make sure that we have a situation where everyone is going to benefit? So this brief sort of history about trade secrets helps to give us some perspective. So in general, the sharing of ideas promotes growth and success for everybody. Competition keeps standards up and prices reasonable, and this benefits the consumer, of course. The artisan doing the good work benefits and reinvests the wealth into the community. Is this a perfect system? In theory, perhaps, but of course in practice there are many abuses and shortcomings. For example, you may have your favorite and lovely little bookstore on the street corner suddenly have to close its doors because it can't compete with Amazon.com. And that certainly is a small tragedy. On the other hand, there could be an artist in a remote part of the world who finds an ebook on Amazon that is not normally available in a hard copy where he or she lives. This artist then, inspired by the lessons in the ebook, starts a successful small business, supports his family, and things improve for him and his family and his community. So in that case, we all want to thank Amazon for helping that family uplift their lives. So how does this relate to you and I as teachers? When I started out in painting, I had a lot of doubts about my knowledge. I was convinced that I needed to know a lot more, and there were a lot of advanced secrets of painting that were being kept away, weren't being shared out. It was difficult for me to find these things. Every how-to-paint book that I got my hands on generally had some trite beginner's information. Where was the more advanced and important stuff that would take my painting to a higher level? But over time, what I've really understood is that what I needed was not more information, but more practice. More effort and mastery of the basics had to be achieved before the more advanced lessons even made any sense to me. Those lessons could only sink in if I had mastered the basics to begin with. Yes, there are definitely a few tips and tricks that are not easily found in most books or DVDs, etc. But they are out there. You just have to persist. You have to work a bit harder. You have to be humble enough to keep asking questions. And persistence and practice conquers everything. Over time, you'll get all the knowledge that you need, and you will start generating information that is unique to yourself. So you actually become a source of new information for others. There is a verse in Proverbs 11:24 that says, "One gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds what is right, yet becomes poor." I think this concept is found in many philosophies, and basically you give and you shall receive. Even when you don't expect or are seeking reward, you're going to still be rewarded for your generosity. Is this being naive? I don't think so. In fact, I know that it is not naive. There are examples of people who are performing at an extremely high level in every walk of life. Commerce, sport, you name it. They give guidance freely, or at the very least for a small price in the cost of a book or a course or maybe a demonstration. If you look on YouTube or Udemy or even your local library, you're going to find tons of examples of information, valuable information, maybe what you need at that point in time. It's going to be there for you if you go to the trouble of looking for it. So does the generous giver become weaker? Is he undermining, or is she undermining herself by being generous? Once again, I don't believe so at all. If anything, person giving grows wealthier in more ways than financial alone. There's a sense of community, common purpose, gratitude that comes with generous assistance to someone else. All of these have tremendous value to you as a person. They enrich your soul, and your gratitude in action also adds purpose to your life. So I don't believe that anybody has anything to fear about giving information and assistance to a student. What about competition? If you're in it for business, are you teaching others to compete with you? Well, maybe you are in some cases, but what of it? You can teach a skill, but only the student can develop mastery of that subject. And how many people even want to go that far? Only a very few. And if they are that determined, they're going to get there with or without your help. In most cases, for example, in my workshops or classes, the vast majority of artists are not looking to become professional masters at painting. They want to paint better and have fun doing so and enrich their own lives through just leveling up their skills. They're not seeking professional fame and fortune or to try and compete with me or bring me down. And those few that do go on to master their subject, they're going to develop their own style of painting. They're going to find their own market of collectors. And over time, they're also going to give back to others by sharing their knowledge. So I do believe that withholding makes for a meanness in spirit, and it also doesn't help your wallet either, to be honest. It is still better to feel good about yourself and live a modest life where you are valued for what you give back to others. I don't think you can have all the financial wealth but be so poor in spirit that that is going to make for a happy life. My last word on this, or bit of free advice, is teach and prosper. You need to lose any anxieties you have about sharing your knowledge. And just rest assured that whoever is inspired by you and seeks to improve their life through the lessons you give them is going to bless you one day. They're not going to begrudge you. They're going to have fond memories of you, or at least hold you in high regard as someone who helped them along the way. And they're more likely to tell others about what you did for them. Anyone who is so sad and pitiful that they're going to try and harm you, they're just going to end up destroying themselves. You have nothing to worry about that person. There is honor in teaching, and there is happiness to be achieved through living a generous life, generous in giving. And ultimately, this is all that we really have to do as human beings, is to lift ourselves up and lift others with us. That is what makes a life well lived. Go forth, teach, and prosper, I think, is the message, the good word today. Starting with families, starting with our friends. If you have children, obviously you know you're going to be teaching them whatever good lessons you have to give. And other people in your community, do the same. People across the world, you can do so with the power of the internet. Share out some of your skill. Everybody has something to share, some knowledge and information that's going to be useful to someone else. It's a big world, so give generously, and you'll also benefit in many ways. So anyway, that thought for today, I hope it maybe has come at a right moment for you. If you're having doubts, or maybe you're feeling that life is a little empty and lacking in purpose right now, almost certainly one of the things that's going to enrich your life in many ways is to reach out and help others. This podcast, as always, brought to you by my painting course, Learn to Paint with Impact, a comprehensive painting course teaching the foundation principles of good painting. You'll find more information about this course and others as well on my website. Just look for painting courses at malcolmdeweyfineart.com. I want to thank you for being with me today. And if you've enjoyed this episode or found it useful in some way or maybe useful to others, please share it, subscribe, and let me know. If you've enjoyed it, just drop me a line as well. Until next time, happy painting. Cheers for now.